that's where we got unofficially engaged.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, what a great place to do that.
Yeah. My name's Leanne Williams. I've been married for 31 years. I just lost my husband this past February. It was an overdose of oxycodone.
I think this was the day in the sun. They were all sunburnt and passed out on the couch. So they're all red.
Leanne gently turns each page of the scrapbook. In her quiet way, she shows me pictures of falling in love with her college sweetheart, winters spent building snow caves in their yard, and growing a family with three beautiful children in Heber City, Utah.
It says, look how much we've done in 20 years, from 1986 to 2006. So 2 years before the accident, he put this together.
It was in an instant that this family started their life-changing journey of chronic pain. In January 2008, Leanne and her husband Steve were in a car accident.
My husband was permanently injured. He had disc damage done to his neck.
After the accident, none of the surgeries and other medical procedures seemed to help, so Steve was continually prescribed opioids.
He became more paranoid. He thought everyone was out to get him. He would pick fights with people. He didn't trust anyone. If you were to know him, you know, even 10 years ago, he still was this fun, loving, caring husband, caring father, and he loved to do practical jokes on people, and he always looked out for people who were, you know, isolated and lonely. He was very generous and kind and fun. He was so fun. And so it broke my heart to see how this drug changed his personality and basically ruined our lives.
It became a cycle for nearly a decade. Once a month, he went to the doctor and got the prescription.
It wasn't like they had a plan, had a protocol in place that, okay, we're going to do this for so long, see how it works, and then we're going to try this. They didn't have any alternatives, so they were just meeting his needs.
Steve is one of about 30,000 Americans who have died from an opioid-related overdose this year. There is always an associated risk with taking opioids, but it's important to realize that the vast majority of pain patients with legitimate prescriptions do not become addicted. The opioid crisis is complex, and to address it, several steps are being taken, including a search for non-addictive alternatives. Doctors Michael McIntosh and Vikas Patel can find themselves between a rock and a hard place when it comes to helping patients deal with chronic pain. They understand how desperate people like Steve can be for relief, but they also recognize the potential risks associated with long-term opioid use.
I think opioid abuse is common because chronic pain is common, and we don't have good alternatives for treatment of long-term chronic pain.
And a lot of it, I think, goes back to the time when pain became what they called the fifth vital sign. And as physicians, we were pushed pretty hard to treat pain very seriously and to take it very seriously. And as such, if you don't treat it, you're neglecting the patients.
The concern, however, is that individuals respond differently to opioids, and some people are more prone to getting addicted than others. In Steve's case, a physician's assistant expressed concern. And while he was never formally diagnosed, Leanne says she now has no doubt that Steve was an unsuspecting victim of addiction.
So what medical researchers are trying to do is identify other targets that would also produce pain relief, but that wouldn't have these addictive properties like the opioid.
And that's exactly what Doctors McIntosh and Patel are doing. They are involved in studies researching two very different compounds that have the potential to radically change people's options when it comes to treating pain.
Certainly the marijuana and cannabis derivatives is of great interest. And we're trying to figure out, does cannabis itself have a really good pain relieving effect or not?
Dr. Patel is a spine surgeon at the University of Colorado. He is involved in a study looking at the pain relieving effects of marijuana compared to opioids.
We don't know nearly as much as we should about the benefits as well as the harms of marijuana.
The problem is that it's been a controlled and illegal substance for so long, opportunities to study it were limited.
When the Marijuana Act was passed in Colorado, and suddenly it was available to everybody for recreational as well as medical purposes, it kind of set the stage. There was funding opportunities out there for real science in learning more about cannabis and its medical effects.
Volunteers that do not regularly use marijuana or opioids are enrolled in an ongoing study with a research team that includes Dr. Patel. The volunteers undergo three different tests. In each test, their sensitivity to pain is determined after they've been given marijuana smoke, oxycodone, or a placebo.
Basically, they're tested to see when a certain pressure becomes painful, and then we record those pressures. The idea then is hopefully we see similarities or differences between oxycodone, marijuana, and placebo in how much pain a person can tolerate.
While the potential of marijuana is on everyone's radar, a newly discovered compound is also making its way into the limelight. Dr. McIntosh is a psychiatrist and professor at the University of Utah. He is part of a team that discovered a potent painkiller produced by snails in the ocean.
Snails face the problem of trying to capture a rapidly moving prey when they themselves are quite slow moving. So they've had to come up with sophisticated arsenals of compounds to be able to accomplish that. And some of those compounds act in unique ways, and we're trying to capitalize on that.
The team is still investigating exactly how the snail compound works. What they do know is that the compound targets a different pathway in the body than opioids, and it doesn't appear to have addictive properties. Dr. McIntosh says the most surprising result, though, is that the pain-relieving effects in mice lasted long after the drug had been administered.
The animals are not experiencing pain like they were, even though they're not on drug. And so our hope is that the same thing can happen in the human state, that not only are you masking the pain, which is a good goal, but all the better is if you can repair some of the underlying pathology so that that pain's not even there in the first place.
Leanne's husband, Steve, actually did try some alternatives, but she wonders if they gave up on those things too soon.
He did try marijuana for a time, but then for religious reasons and for ethical reasons, he didn't feel good about that. If I could go back, I would do everything that I could to avoid having him on oxycodone.
While potential alternatives for pain management offer some hope, they will never mask the pain that one experiences in losing a loved one to opioids. The day Leanne shared her love story with me, a love story that ultimately turned into tragic loss, she sat down at her piano and played Amazing Grace. It's a sweet reminder of why she's able to go on.
It means that everything's gonna be okay.
With Utah Public Radio, I'm Risa Ledbetter.
This UPR original series is brought to you in part by the Association for Utah Community Health, providing training and technical assistance to health centers and affiliates across Utah. More information available online at auch.org.